This, of course, is the seventh day, and we're going to talk about that today. But one thing I want to shoot, and all of you are brand new here, and what's going to transpire after we have finished the services here, we're all going to walk out in that generally grassy area where there's two stones, I mean a concrete block stones, and in those concrete block stones are, quote, the seven rocks. Remember, we started the first thing with pouring the water on the rocks. Now we're going to pour one glass of wine and one glass of water through the two shofars, and they're going to pour down on top of that the rocks. And it's kind of like an interesting picture. We'll talk about that when that takes place. So when we get that finished, we'll be able to continue on. We'll do this after we have finished our services here, then we'll go walk right out there. So just keep that part in mind. All right. I'm primarily going to do my very, very best to stay in the seventh chapter of John. However, I have to backtrack a little bit in the sixth chapter. And so I'm just going to highlight some of the things that we are aware of in the sixth chapter of the book of John. Okay? In the process, this is the book where he had fed the 5,000 people, and they had food, and they had the fish, right? And then to come on to, let's go to verse 26 on John, the sixth chapter here. And Yahshua said to them, "Most surely I say to you, you seek me not because you saw signs or a miracle. You did it because you ate bread and were full." Then he says, "Do not labor for food, which perishes, but labor for food which endures, everlasting labor." Drop down to verse 32. "Most assuredly I say to you," to talk about the manna in the field, "Moses did not give you the bread from heaven, but it was my Father who gave you the true bread from heaven." Now we have to talk about manna and the other bread, which this chapter is really going to address real quickly. And then drop down to verse 35 here. I'm just reading these things real quick so we get a picture of where I'm going to try to, hopefully, I can steer my message. "I am the bread of life. And he said, 'He who comes to me shall never hunger. And he who believes," or I would say, "who trusts me, shall never thirst." So in a sense, inside of yourself, are you hungry? He says, "If you come to me, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me shall never hunger." Never hunger. It's an interesting statement, don't you think? Now, most of us say, "Well, no, I hunger for righteousness. I hunger for truth. I hunger for this. I hunger for that." And the Messiah said, "I am it. I am the one." Verse 36, "But I say unto you that you have seen me, and you do not trust me." Remember, I talked about that trust yesterday. It's one thing to say, "Believe me." You don't trust what he has to say. You don't trust what he is doing. Yes, you saw the bread. It increased. Everybody got something to eat. They got the fish. It increased. Everybody got something to eat. He says, "You're coming to me for the wrong reason. You're coming to me because you're looking for food. And it's going to perish. It's not lasting." Then he addressed himself that he is the bread of life. And all that the Father, verse 37, gives me, will come to me, and the one who comes to me, I will never let go of. And he says he's the bread of life, and they murmured about it. And what do you mean by that? I haven't got the slightest idea what you're talking about. And in verse 43, he says, no one can come to me unless the Father who sent me draws him, and I will raise him up in the last day. Okay, we got that picture. We understand that point. But I want to go to verse 45. It is written by the prophets, and they shall be taught by Yahshua, right? They'll be taught by Elohim. You have been taught by the Creator of heaven and earth. The Creator of heaven and earth has taught you and is teaching you. He is so much involved with your education that he doesn't let anybody else be of it unless he so assigns them to be. In this particular case, he assigned his son to be one of the teachers, primary number one teacher. And so we are learning not just what, quote, Jesus said, we're learning what the eternal Creator of heaven and earth has been teaching us. You remember there's a, I think it's the book of 1 John, I'm not quite mistaken on it. He says, you have no need, for the Spirit is teaching you. Now we say, oh yeah, okay, I know that means now. No. It is the Elohim, the Creator of heaven and earth, the one who formed you, formed me, formed everything around about us, is the one who is teaching us. We think, oh no, he's up there playing a harp. He's sitting there waiting in his seat, says, I wish my son would hurry up and get his job done. No, he is so close to his creation that he sent his son to do the job. Sometimes people think God is perhaps farther off in the distance than what he really is. I find that very fascinating. Let's drop down now to 53, verse 53. This is a very interesting statement he is saying. I talked about this a little bit yesterday. We're going to go into it a little bit today before I get into the seventh chapter. That's very important. And Yahshua said to them, verse 53, most assuredly I say to you, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life in you. That's a really powerful, weird statement, right? Now, God has given us tremendous volumes and volumes and volumes of hindsight. So we have the answer. But if you were there, what would your answer be? What on earth is he talking about? Wait a minute. He just did this thing with the bread. He's increased it. He says, don't go after that because that perishes. Don't you think that if you were there and not knowing anything of the future or what he really was trying to say, you would say, something's weird about this guy. Okay? Then he goes on, whosoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life. I will raise him up in the last day. Remember I said that earlier? I will not let go of him. I'll raise him up in the last day. And along comes this bread and his flesh and his blood. It sounds a real word. Verse 55, my flesh is the true bread indeed, and my blood is the true drink. He who eats my flesh and drinks my blood abides in me and I in him. That's an odd statement again. If you were there for the very first time, you would say, and let's say you're one of the disciples, you know, the one that followed him around for these 2.5 years, or maybe 3 years, and you're already there, you're going, you're going, oh, wait a minute. Verse 60. Let's drop down to verse 60. Therefore, many of his disciples, when they heard what he said, this is very difficult. I don't think I understand what he is saying. Now, Jesus heard them say. Then he turned around and explains to them precisely what it means. Did you notice that? He tells you exactly what it means. Let's listen there carefully here. And he says, does that may cause you to stumble? Does that trouble you? Well, yes, it did. That's what troubled him, right? And he comes back and he says something else. Well, if that's going to trouble you and that's going to cause you to stumble, what are you going to do when you see the Son of Man rising up in heaven? Oh, that's even more stumbling. That's even greater than what he just got to saying. It'll trouble you. Then he goes on and says something very fascinating. Verse 63. And he says, it is the Spirit which gives life. Now, we have definitions of the Spirit, the Spirit, the Spirit, the Spirit. Everyone has different kinds of things. But I want to tell you something very firmly. It is the eternal creator of heaven and earth, your Father, who is Spirit, teaching you what he wants you to know. And what is the... What's the most fundamental thing about the creator of heaven and earth? What defines him as who he is? Oh my. Why did he create this earth? What? Father, okay. Why did he create this earth? For what reason?
Live here with his family that he's creating.
Put someone in his image.
I'm sorry, what?
Create someone in his image.
He created this earth to create life like him. Look at the first chapter of Genesis. We say, oh, wow, it's the light, did it? No, wait a minute, that's not the issue. Oh, it was a separate. No, that's not the issue. Oh, it was a tree, water coming up to be separated. There comes trees. Well, that's not the issue. Oh, it's the Moedim. That's the fourth one. Yeah. Wait, that's not the issue. Where did it end at? The last thing he created was himself. Yes or no? And so everything that surrounds us, he has created it, and it says, for man. Basically, he's created for the sons of God. Right? Now, the flesh doesn't know how to handle that. And so it is a spirit. Life comes from that spirit. Life didn't come from some evolutionary concept. Life didn't just happen on the scene. Life came from life. Your life exists because a life existed before you. I don't mean your flesh and blood. I mean in your spirit and your soul. Adam and Eve was created and life was given to them. And it came from the one who delivers life. Right? So we're looking at this thing. And he says one more thing. Let's continue on here for just a minute. And he says, the flesh profits nothing. Wait. What? You just said we must eat your flesh. It profits nothing. So these people are saying, I don't understand what he is talking about. Now in our wisdom that we have been given, with tremendous amount of hindsight given to us from the creator of heaven and earth, we got the picture. But if you were there, what picture would you be seeing? How would you judge these people? Would you look at them as being naive? They don't know God? They don't understand who he is? Let's continue on. And he says now remember, spirit is the one that is life. Now, the words which I speak to you are spirit. Okay. So we recognize that food that endures forever is not his physical flesh nor his physical blood. It is what? What he is saying. Devarim. Let's get closer. Devarim ben Elohim. The son of Elohim. Because that's what he said. You got to hear what I have to say. And if you do this, I will raise you up in the last day. We all understand that intellectually, right? And so we come through this life, and he says, but there are some of you, verse 48, who do not, here's this famous word, belief. Basically, you don't believe what I am saying, do you? You don't accept what I am telling you. It is a spirit that gives life, and I'm giving you spiritual words. That's what you are to consume. That's what you are to eat. That's what you are to live by. It does not perish. The eternal Father does not perish, nor does the words of Yahshua perish. They are going on forever and ever. Now, I know some of us may be hungry. Got to get a glass of water. Got to get an apple to eat or something like that. But see, that perishes, doesn't it? The Messiah comes back here and he says, "There I said to you that no one can come to me unless it has been granted. Every one of you have not been drawn to the Son of the Living God because some evangelist somewhere, by some preacher somewhere, by some wise man or wise woman convinced you. No, it is the Father who brought you to his Son." Now you have to say, okay, I'll accept that one. With that in mind, in this concept of trying to figure out what the next chapter 7 is about, chapter 6 leads into, not directly, into chapter 7, and he says different words here. Before we go there, we know many left. And Yahshua said to the 12, verse 76, "Do you also want to go away?" What did Simon Peter say? "Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life." Peter got the message. Peter understood. And the other apostles also understood. The 12 understood. Yes, we know that one of them was an adversary. We won't go there today. But not for this purpose. Well, is that... Well, hello. Welcome. We're going here, and we're finding out, after this event took place, chapter 7 shows up on the scene. Now, the author, John, connected the sixth chapter of those 5,000 being fed and the bread of life. Now he brings it into the next subject matter. This is not coincidental, by the way. He had something to say. John chapter 7. Now I have a little bit of a translation before me, so you're going to have to probably bear with me. Chapter 7, verse 1. "After these things," after what took place, "after these things, he walked in Galilee. For he did not want to walk in Judea, because the Jews sought to kill him." Let me ask you a question. How many of you know what the word Galilee means? Land of the Goyim. The land of the Gentiles, or the lands of the ones who are cast out. That's what that word really means. That's why it's being challenged here in the seventh chapter. where in the prophets, where in the writings, where in the Torah, a prophet's supposed to come from the land of the Gentiles? Weird. Oh, what? Verse 2. That's an open statement, by the way. Verse 2, kind of like another thought's coming in here. Is now the Jews' Feast of Tabernacles was at hand. That's an unusual phrase, don't you think? I thought it was God's tabernacle. Right? No, this isn't the Jewish tabernacle. This is God's tabernacle. Uh-oh. John, you got it wrong. You blew it. Right? Now, remember, the book of John was the last one written. He's an old man, he wrote it. Let me ask you a question. The temple had been gone by now when John wrote this. Now, all he says, he's identifying a situation where the Jews were keeping the Feast of Tabernacles. And he says, it's the Jewish tabernacle. What's that different with yours? What is that different with God's tabernacle? Does God have a tabernacle? We learn something from Daniel, my son. And he says, we are, what? We are the sukkah. Today, quote, your life ends. That's it. You don't exist anymore. To clarify this a little bit better, some of you may have to go to 2 Peter. I think 2 Peter talks about the tabernacle that he says is tabernacle that's in me. Turning around and says, I am the tabernacle, I am the sukkah, and I'm going to perish. See, he understood. John understood. This is what the tabernacle is all. Why do you build? It's a picture of us. Picture of us. We are going to die, perish. Cease to be a tabernacle, or cease to be a sukkah, ourselves. Does God dwell within sukkah? When he knocks, open up the door and let him come in. And then we go where he is going to go. He'll raise you up. And here, verse 3, it says, his brothers were therefore said to him, depart from here and go to Judea, and your disciples also may see the works that you are doing, for no one does anything in secret while he himself seeks to be known openly. If you do these things, you show yourself to the world. And even his brothers, what else did they not believe? They didn't believe the miracles, nor did they believe his word. They didn't believe anything that came out of his mouth. After all, his name was Yahshua. They considered him a phony. Now, they believed in God. They knew they were God. They knew who God was. They knew what the Feast of Tabernacles was all about. The Feast of Sukkot. They knew what Passover was all about. They knew all the things of the Torah. They knew those things because they raised up that way. What do you think, Joseph? The father of all those sons and the daughters that he had didn't know anything about Torah? Didn't know anything about tabernacles? They knew a lot. They knew about Passover. They knew what it was about. They understood it. They observed it. They did it. There's something with this, their big brother, they said, you've got it crazy. Because no man can be a son of the Creator of heaven and earth. That is difficult. Oh, you, with your wonderful hindsight, great wisdom, discovering what it says in Hebrews, because you've done the studying, and find out what it says in Greek, and got it all studying, and all in English, oh, you got the picture, you got it, right? Because you've got this wonderful, beautiful, let's call it insight, but really comes from hindsight. The only reason why you believe what you believe now is because of what is written. They didn't see a single thing. We can judge the brothers, but I tell you, deliberately, they were not supposed to see. They're not supposed to understand, and they're supposed to reject him. They had to do it in order that they may become apostles, teachers. But now they understood when his death and resurrection, oh my, look, big brother, look who he is and what he's done. Then they have this wonderful hindsight, which gives them both beautiful insight in their life. Let's continue on here, though. It's very fascinating. Verse 6, he says, my time has not yet come, but your time is already. The world cannot hate me because I testify against its work. You go up to the feast, I'm not going to go. My time is not yet. Of course, we kind of associate that with, okay, his time to die was not yet. His appointed time to die was not yet during the Feast of Tabernacles. Okay, you can accept that. That sounds good. I'm looking at this thing and I'm saying, when was his appointed time to go to this Feast of Tabernacles? Was it the first day? Was it the second day? Was it the third day? There's 7 days. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I'm going to take away this one, this one, this one, this one. Wait. The third day includes day, night, and day. He showed up at the temple on the third day. I know it's a coincidence. Of course, he wasn't supposed to be appointed to show up on the third day, but he showed up on the third day. Interesting. I wonder if that has any picture. Oh, let's pay attention, please. What I'm trying to go to tonight is that this is very, today rather, is very fascinating when I look at it from that point of view. Sweet brothers went up, verse 10, and first thing that the Jews were saying was, where's your brother? He's not here. Where's your brother? I don't know. That's not what they really say. I'm kind of playing words, right? He says, where is he? Well, he's in Galilee. He didn't come. He's in Galilee. And he said, okay. So the people began being concerned, began murmuring, talking back and forth, and some of them said he was what? He's a good man. And others says, oh, no, no, he's the most deceptive person there is. He is deceiving people in the hundreds and in the thousands. We can't allow this deception to continue on. Remember, this is the third day he shows up. And then, however, verse 13, no one spoke openly about him. Why? They're afraid of somebody. Now, we're not going to Jews. We're talking about the Sanhedrin and the leadership of that point in time. It's very, very clear if we keep on reading this section. It had to do with the Pharisees and the Sanhedrin and the chief high priest and so on and so forth. That's the ones that we were were troubled with. And then it says, for about the middle of the feast, Yeshua went up into the temple and taught. Oh my. Now, verse 15 is a very fascinating phrase. Now, first, they weren't going to talk openly. Now, these Jews, basically, it's the Pharisees and the ones that they were sent to make sure and see if they can't get a hold of this guy before he starts talking. Very loudly, by the way, because they didn't talk amongst themselves. They're standing up there and they say, so, how does this man know letters having never studied? Now, Jesus didn't say, oh, hear their thoughts. No, he answered it. But they used a different word. Did you notice that? Letters. He's never studied what the Sanhedrin is teaching. He's never gone to school. He's an uneducated Galilean. Did he go to the Sanhedrin? Did he go to Sheshiva school?
No.
No. Where'd he go? At age 12, he went to the priest at that time. They are the ones that marvel this kid picked up so much information. And they learned from him. So we have an uneducated Galilean here who doesn't know the letters. So I'm going to have a play on words for a minute, please. I'm going to change the wording here. I know it says, and my doctrine is not mine. I'm going to say, my letters are not my letters. Oh. You mean you learn something different than we learn? Yeah. My letters are not my letters, but the letters belong to the one who sent me. Okay. We use the word doctrine. You know what doctrine really means? Simple word, teachings. Very simple, teachings. Teachings. Not law, just teachings. Educating people, telling people something about the doctrine or the teachings. Remember we read there in the 6th chapter? Who is teaching you? Who is teaching you? The Creator of heaven and earth. He's the one that's teaching you. So when Jesus turns, or Yahshua turns, says, this is not my teaching. He doesn't take credit for teaching what he teaches you. He tells you where the teaching comes from. And it comes from his Father, who is the Creator of everything. If anyone wills, verse 17, to do his will. Stop. What? If anyone wills to do his will. Well, I had to ask myself a question. Is my will wanting to do his will? Did you get that message? I'm one of the ones. Is my will, what I want in my life, do I want to do his will? And all of you are going to say, oh yes. Okay, that's what you're here for. Not here, hearing what I'm saying, but here in the body of the Messiah to learn what his will is. What is his will? We said there in the 6th chapter, I'll raise you up in the last day. So this is not our will, but if we want to do his will, what are we going to do? He shall know something. He shall know something about the teaching. He will know whether it is from the Creator of heaven and earth or from my mouth. I said before, God is a whole lot closer connected to us than we may understand. Verse 18. He says, he who speaks of himself speaks of his own glory. But he who speaks of the glory of the one who sent him is true, and no unrighteousness within him. Well, we got that picture, right? Must be the Messiah saying, talk about himself, right? Then he says, you know, did not Moses give you the Torah? Okay. Yes. By the way, he didn't give them Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Didn't give them Acts. Didn't give them Romans. He gave them the Torah. And he says, and you don't even keep it. Now, that's a really heavy word, right? Because we weren't there. We don't know what it meant. We don't know what they were doing. I mean, they had the sacrifice. They're doing the sacrifices. They were doing the killing. They were doing the eating. They were doing all the celebration stuff. Doing everything that the Torah would tell them to do. And they had the killing of the lambs. They had the killing of the goat. They had the killing of the sheep. They had the killing. All that stuff according to the Torah. They weren't saying, well, That's old hat. We're not going to do it anymore. No, that's what they were doing. And Yahshua turns around and says, you're not doing it because you're seeking to kill me. No, we're not. Verse 20. We're not out there to kill you. That's not, we're not here to kill you. You're insane. You got a demon in you. You have no idea what you're talking about. He talked about he does one work and they marvel. And he says, Moses gave you your circumcision. Actually, it didn't come from Moses. It came from the fathers. It started with the father. It didn't start with Moses. But then you circumcised your child because on the seventh, Shabbat, because, you know, you don't want to break the Torah. But it was before the Torah. It was during the time of Abraham. Now, verse 25, I want to ask you, let's just read it for just a moment here. Verse 25, now some of them from Jerusalem said, is this not he whom they seek to kill? But look, he speaks boldly, and they say nothing to him. Do the rulers know indeed that this is truly the... However, we know this man where he is from. But when the Messiah comes, it is one who knows, no one knows from where he comes. And then Yahshua said, wait a minute. You don't know what you're talking about. You both know me and you know where I am from, and I have not come to of myself, but the one who sent me, whom you do not know. But I know him because he's the one who sent me. Let me ask you a question. When you read this, what were the people thinking the function of the Messiah was to be? Let's backtrack here. Now, very interesting here what they're asking. We have been told this, told that, said this, and been told that. However, the people weren't looking for a king. They were not looking for one who delivered them from the hands of Rome. They were not, the people were not, what did they see? Wait a minute, look at the miracles he's doing. This has got to be the Messiah. They weren't looking at the power, the strength, the might, the thunder, the lightning, the army coming in with swords. Remember, they only had one weapon. It was a sword, right? And he said, that's not, you don't need anymore. And after they used the sword, Yahshua had to come up and heal the man's ear for cut his ear off. Very interesting phrase, by the way. Therefore, verse 30, they sought to take him, but no one laid hands on him. Why? Because his hour has not yet come. What hour? Now, many of the people believed in him and said, when the Messiah comes, will he do more than this man can do? Now, we have a picture that these people, the people, were supposed to be looking for some mighty king to take over as King David did and just do destruction left and right and all over the place with the power of the fire coming down from heaven and slaughtering everybody that disagreed with him. No. They knew something. We think they didn't know. They knew the Messiah was to bring forth miracles. That's why they fled to him. What was the biggest thing that Messiah is known for? Healing people. Cleaning people. Casting demons out of people. They say, that's got to be the Messiah. The people weren't looking for a dictator. They weren't looking for the omnipotent power of God. They were looking for somebody different, because they saw what the Messiah was to be. How do they see it? How do some of the people recognize, oh, this is the Messiah? Because he spoke harshly? Or because he had compassion? He had something that nobody else ever had. So they were looking for, quote, not a savior. They're looking for one who will heal. Salvation was not understood until he was killed. Plain as day. Not even the disciples understood that he's also one that brings forth salvation from a curse of the law. They didn't know that. That's not what they were seeing. Okay, anyway, they fought to take him, to kill him. But I find it very fascinating. They were first one of those people were asking, is this the Messiah? Look, the leadership is doing nothing about it. Do they know this is the one? And what did they see? Did the leadership see Yahshua acting like he was the mighty king, the mighty ruler, the one that overthrows their power, one overthrows their dignity, one that tear down the temple? Is that what they saw? They weren't looking for the Messiah, what we think he was looking for. They weren't looking for one to come and conquer and knock down the Romans. They were looking for something different. Yes.
The Lord your God will raise from you a prophet like me, like Moses, from your midst, from your brethren, and you shall hear him. And it says, I'll raise for them a prophet like you from among their brethren. I will speak and will put my words in his mouth, and he will speak them to all that I command him. They had to have known of that.
That's the point.
So they're looking for a prophet.
They're looking for one who's like Moses. Not like David. He is supposed to come from the line of David, but they're looking for someone like Moses. Did Moses have a massive army? Did he conquer all of Egypt to free the people? Did he come down with hellfire and brimstone upon them? No. God did, but he didn't. Moses is known as the deliverer. Yes or no? God said, I'm sending you there to deliver them from. So Moses played the role of a deliverer. Right? But a lot of things happened in their life. They had to be delivered for something else themselves. Yes.
I think we need to be careful about this idea that all the Jews or all the people believed all the same thing and were all looking for the same thing, because there are other stories in the Gospels that indicate that there were certain groups of people that were looking for a Davidic conqueror, because there was one point where he did some miracles.
Yes, I understand that.
And they try to capture him to force him to become king. So there were elements in the people in different places.
No disagreement with
that
you're
were looking for
what,
exactly
what I'm trying
that.
To get here is that what happened on this, the time of this particular Feast of Tabernacles. The people were seeing something different. They're looking for something different during the Feast of Tabernacles. They weren't looking for that during Passover time. They weren't looking at that during Days of Unleavened Bread. They weren't looking at that during the Days of Shavuot. They're looking for it during the Days of Shavuot. Why? Why during this time? Verse 40. Therefore, many of the crowd, they heard this saying that he said, this is the prophet. This is the Messiah. That's what they saw. And the Sanhedrin and the high priest didn't like that. They wanted to silence this man. And they couldn't do it during a very special time. They couldn't shut him up during the days of Sukkot. They couldn't silence him. Because the people were looking for this. And our vision in our modern times, we don't really think of the days of Sukkot has anything to do with the prophet. He really is. With the Messiah, he really is. We in our modern times think of, I gotta build a sukkah, we gotta get a tent out there, we gotta do this, we gotta do that, we gotta do this, we gotta do that. And our minds are not really sent enter in on, because we are so of the world, that we don't center in. Now, what happened during, this is the only time we have the Messiah showing up during the Feast of Trumpets, our Feast of Sukkot. And he only went there half the time, I mean, a latter part. We're saying, okay, what is this picture really telling us about Shavuot? Sukkot, rather. What is it really telling us about? The people were not looking to make sure they were doing everything right, because you're like us. You don't. They were looking for a prophet, and they saw it. They're looking for the Messiah, and they saw it. The high priest did not. The Sanhedrin did not. Why? Because the Father did not bring the high priest unto his Son. The Father did not bring the Sanhedrin to his Son. The Father brought the people. How many of them in the story of what Yeshua have done in his time, how many of the high priesthood, the high Pharisees, the high Sanhedrin, were healed? They forbid it. Remember? They forbid it. But the people, Yeshua, did it. That tells them something. What were they seeing? Just a miracle guy? Guy, a lot of miracles? Or were they seeing, truly, this is the prophet? Truly, this is the Messiah? Look at your own self. Look at your own self. How many of those people out there don't see the prophet, but you do? When do you see it more? The time we get together every year on these 7 days, we focus in on this prophet. We focus in on this Messiah. The Feast of Tabernacles is aiming to one thing. Where I am, you cannot go, but I'm coming back, and I'm going to take you with me. And so, though it's all temporary, what do we look at? We're only here for a short period of time in our world. Anyway, they tried to capture him, and the officers went out to try to catch him, verse 45, and they couldn't do it, and they says, we do not have... We can't get a hold of him. Nobody talks like this guy, you know. Nobody speaks like this guy does. So even the officers, not the Sanhedrin, not the people they sent out to arrest him, they said, oh my, we can't arrest him. Man, no one speaks like that. They heard also. They understood also. And they did not arrest him. Not because the people are afraid only. Because, man, no one speaks like that before. Lord, we go on, we had Nicodemus and so on and so forth. And they said, are you? Verse 52. They answered and said unto Nicodemus, basically, verse 52, are you also from the land of the Gentiles? Well, he wasn't, but they accused him of being one. And he said, now, search the scriptures. you won't find a prophet coming out of Galilee. Now, where should the prophet come out of? Bethlehem? Nazareth? He came out of Galilee. He wasn't even living amongst the Judah, in the land of Judah. He lived in the land of Galilee, where his mother lived. What town did his mother live in? Do you remember? Capernaum. That's his hometown. He went back to his hometown and teach his people. He couldn't do it. They rejected him. His own brother rejected him in the town of, small town at that point in time. So I guess my point I wanted to say today is sometimes when we participate and do the sukkah, make sure we got it right, make sure we got all the leaves right, make sure we got everything just hunky-dory, the best that we can do, and understand the purpose of the sukkah. It's us. We are the ones who's perishing. We're the ones that will not have eternal life. We're the ones that need eternal life. It has to come from the... But the tabernacle tells us something. It's the prophet. It's the Messiah. What's going to happen tomorrow? What does the eighth day show you? Why is the eighth day tacked onto something that's going to perish? You ever ask that question? Show us life. He's going to put us into life. Where is the complete restoration of mankind? That's what the eighth day pictures. It's just not the restoration to make sure we don't have polluted rivers. It's not the time of restoration that we make sure we don't have no GMO food. It's the restoration of all things. What thing was God going to restore? Oh yeah, he's going to restore day number one. Restore day number two. He's going to restore day number three. No, he could restore mankind into what he created them for in the first place. Like him. That's the plan. That's what he created mankind for. And that's his function. So we think about restoration. Remember, this old earth vanishes. And a new one. I'm going to reshape this filthy earth? No. I'm going to make a new one. I'm going to make a new heaven. This earth is passed away. It's gone. There's a very significant thing about the eighth day. Something has to be removed first before the dawn comes. Something has to be cut away and thrown away, never to return. That's what the eighth day is all about.